And good morning. It is 9:10 at KBUR, City Manager Day on the talk show. Colin Letty is across the council from me. Colin busy last night getting new city council members, or at least announcing the new city council members that are moving in. They are, Colin, they are the new city council members are?
Robert Kreitzer and Bill Maupin were both elected to the Burlington City Council last night.
All right, so they will be replacing Shane McCampbell and Annie Wilson. We've got the Assistant City Manager for Public Works, Nick McGregor, joining us today. And Nick, well, let's see, we had about three and a half inches of snow on Halloween. I don't know if that was a trick or a treat or whatever.
Well, it definitely was not a treat.
Not a treat, but you said you can talk all you want about the snow, but you really can't predict when it's going to be, how much snow you're going to get and when it's going to come. You said you're preparing for potentially a snowy winter. Is that right?
Yeah, I think we'll probably have some of the same as what we had last year. Looks like the trends of some moisture are going to continue, so I guess we're prepared.
It seemed that the snow came on weekends. It seemed weekend after weekend after weekend, and it was like Saturday or Sunday, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it was convenient timing.
I was not necessarily. It worked out that, well, if you're a Monday through Friday employee, it means that you. A lot of your snow removal people were out doing the weekend stuff, weren't they?
Yeah, we had quite a few overtime hours last year.
But so how does the budget work on snow? If you had a dry winter, so to speak, and not a lot of snow, do you sock that away and then use it the next year? How does that work?
Yeah, so snow removal in the city's budget is funded by road use tax. We specify out snow as a part of our function. So I don't know what we amended the budget this last year to what it is. If we don't use all the money, for instance, it returns to the road use tax fund that we have within the city. So road use tax funds our regular street salaries and operations and materials.
Do you buy the salt or is there a pre-treatment that do you do a pre-treatment yet?
We do pre-treatment. The DOT actually has quite a bit of it, and so we do some kind of shared service. We do some street sweeping for them along Roosevelt, and they give us a certain allotment of pre-treatment. Okay. We don't always pre-treat. Kind of depends on what the temperature levels are, what kind of moisture has already come in. You know, if it's raining beforehand, we don't typically pre-treat because that
It'll just wash it away.
Okay. So it's kind of a balance game, and you always kind of watch on what the weather's doing. But, you know, we buy salt. We just had some delivered, I think, not that long ago, and we use a salt sand mix.
Okay.
So we use sand that we have in inventory, and then we spread that out.
What is the pre-treat that you do? What is a chemical?
Oh, I don't know what it is. There's so many out there too.
Yeah.
It's a something chloride.
It's designed to what? To keep the as the snow falls to kind of keep it from sticking to the pavement? Is that the idea?
Yeah, it warms up the overall temperature levels so it doesn't freeze and cause, you know, slickness.
But obviously if it's very bitter cold, it's not going to work very well.
Yeah, there's a temperature threshold in which it works. Even the salt sand mix that we have, it only goes to, I think, 10 degrees, and then it's no longer really effective. I know they have things that go colder than that, but... typically if it's that cold, you don't have moisture coming, but you may have existing moisture that has like a refreeze or something.
Okay. So the big question everybody has is, okay, so how do you determine first thing you're going to do? Well, I know the emergency routes, they get the first priority, right?
Correct. Depending on kind of the operations of what we have, if we have less than 2 inches of snow, we're not in a snow emergency. Past that, it automatically goes into effect. Should we have kind of an ice storm or some sleet that causes a lot of slickness, you know, we can call that into effect. We do emergency or emergency routes first, and we'll push them so that they're open. If it's still snowing, we'll keep on those emergencies. We don't have enough staff typically, if it's still snowing, it keeps us busy enough to keep those open.
Right.
Once those are opened up, we hit the secondaries, and then we go to residentials. We don't push to the curb, however. We get a lane of travel open, and then we go back to the emergencies and curb those and then move to the secondaries and then residentials. So
okay.
I know dealing with some of the calls that come in during the winter, you know, certain residential streets that, yes, you know, it may have started snowing 10 hours ago, but it's continued to snow throughout that time period. So we've kept the emergency routes open and haven't gotten to the residentials yet.
How do you, is there a priority system on residential areas? Is there, I mean, do you do that? I'll give you an example. It used to be that it was based on your trash day. If the trash day was either going on or coming up the next day, you were a higher priority than the other ones.
It does follow the trash route so that the other city services like trash can go in and be effective. It depends on staffing levels, too. I mean, sometimes if it's in the middle of the day and you don't expect it and it's a lighter snow, we'll send more staff out to get it knocked out quicker.
Okay.
So you may see a little higher priority, you know, disbursement of folks to get that done quicker.
Okay. All right. Well, that's the way the snow flies or doesn't fly or gets picked up anyway. The question, I know you always get to, why do you go back? I just get my driveway cleared out, and then you come in and you cover it all back in again.
And that's a result of not curbing right away or curbing as you're doing it. It does take more time, so we're trying to open up more quicker. And so that's why people see that as a result is we don't go curb to curb. And so they see a pile in front of their driveway, and then we come back and curb. It ends up there again.
All right. Let's talk about, that's snow, and again, the snow routes, is there anything different about downtown? A snow emergency goes into effect automatically at the 2-inch level, is that right?
Correct.
And when does it go off?
It's a 12-hour shift,
okay.
but also can depend on if it's still snowing.
Right.
So. I hate to answer it depends, but it really does.
If you live on a snow emergency route and you park your car in front of your house, you better move.
Correct.
If you don't move your car,
they'll be ticketed/towed.
Ticketed/towed. So your best advice is if the forecast even looks like it could be snowing, best advice would be to move, right?
Correct. Yep.
What you do in advance would be more beneficial to you. All right, we're talking snow, we're talking anything else that's going on. Boy, you had a lot of road projects in general that are, I don't know where we are in terms of, are you still trying to get some road projects finished up?
Unfortunately, it looks like the weather's turning on us, and so we have some asphalt work that's going on in North Hill right now. They were able to get North Street done. There's more to the project, but the way it looks temperature-wise, they won't be able to get that accomplished this year yet. Locust sewer separation is still continuing on. I want that road closed up prior to the really heavy or the deep cold coming in, but they're still working on that. The project out by the Recplex, the new roads out there, they've gotten the roadway completed down so there's access to the indoor facility. But there's still, you know, roadway that'll be worked on next spring. So we're kind of having to shut quite a bit of it down here. But
is there a temperature threshold? Is that what it is?
Asphalt is at the plant. We'll just shut down production. Concrete's a little bit more variance. You know, there's an opportunity if it gets too cold, they'll still make it, but you'll have a cold winter mix. With the way we work, we have to have certain temperatures and specifications to be able to pour concrete. You can still pour concrete in relatively colder weather, but you know it's going to depend. It could get cold here and then warm up in December, and you could still see some road work potentially happen with concrete, asphalt. Once they shut down for the winter, they're pretty much done.
So basically, what happens? Most of your public works projects in the wintertime kind of go to sleep. Is that right?
Yeah, it does give us an opportunity, though, because we have, you know, engineering staff that has to work on the next year's projects. there's a lot of plans and specifications that has to be put together before we go out to bid for the next set of, you know, the next set of work that has to be done.
All right, it's 9:20 at KBUR. Nick McGregor is our guest. We're going to take a break, and we will be back with more of Nick and the talk show. If you've got a question about anything and everything regarding the city and public works, and particularly roads and or streets, anything else, you can give us a call right now at 754-1490,
319-754-1490. Errands have been run and the chores are done. Time to finally relax by screaming for your favorite team for the next 3 hours right here on the Hawkeye Sports Network.
Iowa travels to Wisconsin this Saturday with pregame at 1, kickoff at 3. Brought to you by Case Bank Community Credit Union, the Boogaloo and Fun City at Pizzazz, Barn Grover Glass, and by Courtesy Door on News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
Looking for new furniture from top brands? Check out the Furniture Store in Burlington. They carry popular brands such as Ashley, Best, FlexSteel, Sunny Designs, and many more. Not only do they have some of the best prices in town, their dependable moving team will get your new furniture to your house very promptly. Free delivery with qualified purchases. For your next piece of furniture, check out the Furniture Store, located on the corner of Harrison and Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at thefurniturestoreburlington.com.
Introducing the $1 yoga deal.
Breathe in. And I'ma see you later.
Or get a real deal at McDonald's. Introducing the buy one, get one for a dollar deal. Buy one of your faves and pick another for just an extra buck. Choose from the Big Mac, filet of fish, quarter pounder with cheese, or 10-piece chicken McNuggets. But you better stop by McDonald's today, because this deal is only around for a limited time. Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value. Cannot be combined with any offers or combo meal.
Now that the holiday travel season is here, you can stop crushing candy and play the game of the year. It's Bobby Bones. And what better way to travel than with Best Fiends, the 5-star rated puzzle game with over 100 million downloads. Play online or offline. That's right, no internet connection required. Solve thousands of fun puzzles and collect tons of characters, all while 30,000 feet in the air. That's right, download Best Fiends for free on the App Store or Google Play today. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends.
The days are getting shorter and shorter, which means temperatures will be dropping from cool to cold. Hi, this is Bob Jern from Jern's Heating and Air Conditioning, your Amana dealer. With the long hot days coming to an end, it's the perfect time to make sure your furnace is up to snuff for the colder weather. Go ahead and turn that thermostat to heat. If warm air is blowing out and everything is running smoothly, then you're in good shape. If it's not running the same as last year and sounds a little off, then give me a call. No matter what brand of furnace you have, we'll come out and service it to make sure you stay warm all winter long. And if you're needing a whole new unit, we'll hook you up with a brand new Amana high-efficiency furnace. Right now, local utility companies are offering a rebate on new Amana high-efficiency furnaces and air conditioners for a total of $780. For comfortable and consistent temperatures in your home year-round, call Jern's Heating and Air Conditioning, your Amana dealer, serving southeast Iowa and west central Illinois, with 24-hour service and never an overtime charge.
And welcome back on the talk show. Nick McGregor is our guest today. We're talking about road projects. We're talking about what's done during the winter time. And you said that's a planning. Is that mostly a planning time, and that's a designing time? Is that right?
Yeah. Nick? So before you start a road project, even if it's as simple as what it looks like for laying asphalt, you still have to get survey shots and quantities, and you know, put all the plans together so you can put it out to bid. So, you know, you get a good number and you don't have a lot of change orders come at you.
You've got a lot of different projects that are on the docket, isn't that right?
Yeah, we have some of it designed, or the engineering hired out, but next year, you know, we have Central planned as a project. North Hill will continue on with some of the asphalt work, and then we have some more we're going to probably add to it or try to. And then the following years, you know, with Tiger Grant, that's going to be, it's a lot of work that'll go on.
We've got a flood mitigation project that's going to be in another phase, major phase coming up in the next season. Now, does the city handle that, or is that handled by the state, or how does that get?
The city oversees. We handle the check writing, I guess, but we've hired the engineering services out. And then the construction administration on that as well. Just the, with all the intricacies of, you know, the permits that you need with the Corps.
Okay.
And whatnot.
So you basically, you subcontract that, is that
but,
right?
Yeah, but correct. So it is city work.
Okay.
So I, you know, for instance, I and the city engineer meet with our engineering firm to go over the plans. And so, yeah, that is going to happen next year, assuming we get something lower than what we've had for the river for the last, I don't know, 10 months.
Yeah, it has been. That's probably been the biggest challenge, hasn't it, that you've had to face? The river being high and staying high and causing, and sometimes I guess you've seen probably enough HESCO barriers, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, I think I've had enough in my short career here to
and HESCO to barriers. HESCO barriers, they are, we were talking about it in Colin. I know you saw it up in the Quad Cities. They did not have, you know, a HESCO barrier when it's soaked. After a while, it just simply loses its ability to really, it starts deteriorating, doesn't it?
No, yeah, its strength greatly reduces, and the ones, for instance, when we had our breach, you know, those HESCOs had been up 90 plus days, and they were saturated. You know, we had plenty of rain in those areas, and I would have never thought it was going to happen in that south section. You know, to me,
yeah,
it was going to happen on the north where all the pressure was, but, you know, it's... what you get when you're trying to fight a flood and
I think
the duration.
Didn't you have two rows of HESCOs, HESCO barriers during those those areas?
Where the breach occurred, it was two wide on the bottom for a base, and then there was one high on above it.
Okay.
On the north side, we did beef it up a little bit. We put three wide on the bottom and then two high with the ability, just because we didn't know if it was going to continue to go up.
Okay.
Plus the mass behind that wall.
But as the time marches on, you know that you're subject to having failure. Is that right?
With the HESCO barriers, I you know, that they're a temporary flood protection device. With the permanent structures that are going to get installed next year during construction season, that'll be where the failure occurred. You know, it'll be the north end tie-off that'll come into the hillside. And then on the south end, it'll go to the Burlington Junction tracks with the gate.
What is the threshold when the river reaches a certain, what's the river level that causes you to go out, or is it the prediction of the river level that causes you to set up the HESCOs? Mm-hmm. Is there a certain mark on that river that's going to tell you, say, okay, we better get got to start laying the HESCOs out?
Yeah. So right now, unfortunately, this north end is fairly low. When it comes to river level, at 16.5 and rising, we're activated to start putting the HESCOs, because we have to wrap it around the permanent structure that's there. You know, we have to go on the, you know, kind of the river side of the flood wall and put them there, so you can try to get a good blend of the two protection devices. But, you know, after that, there's different thresholds that we have.
Yeah, we're,
you know,
still
kind of as far west as we come with things. And then when it comes to the permanent wall and the temporary aluminum panels, 19 is a good number to know when we have to start putting the gaps in. It's all new too, because we've only had it for a year.
We're at 16.2 right now. Technically, we're in flood stage or above flood stage, which is 15 feet. But 15 feet doesn't really do anything, does it?
No, we're aware of when it hits 15, but we don't have to go out and do anything flood control wise.
Is there any flood control that's going on right now, or anything? Are there any HESCOs up any place?
We put the HESCOs up when it started rising here, because it did get up to 18.2,
okay.
I think. And so the HESCOs are right up right now.
So they're
still up. We haven't
taken
them down. The only things we did take down is we have a kind of a mixing area in the Hawkeye storm sewer that would equalize, that we had to put up by the auditorium. We did take that down because the boiler system came in this week.
How long does it take to set up a HESCO?
It is fairly time intensive, you know, to set up the north protection that we have and the south protection. It's a 2-day setup for the extent that we have set up.
Okay, and the areas that you're most looking to protect, I mean, you obviously have priorities, right? In terms of what's the highest priority is what, the auditorium and the port building?
They're important pieces to protect. However, in my opinion, the Market Street lift station is the most important.
Ah, okay.
And you saw the ramifications. If we don't do anything, what happens? You know, the downtown smells like poo. I mean,
yeah.
Because if it's not working, if it's not functional, which is what happened when the breach occurred, people have raw sewage in the basements. You know, Frank Millard, all the people that are on the low end of the sewer system receive the sanitary sewer water that can't go anywhere.
Now, this phase or this next phase of the flood mitigation project, will that do away with that possibility? I mean, I think the lift station, isn't the lift station one of the areas that is going to be protected by that?
It will be wrapped. It will, the north and south tie-off are key in getting the whole riverfront area wrapped around. You will have, for further protection, should we have a high river crest again, we will have to blend HESCO barriers with the south tie-off and run down Market Street.
Okay.
So there, the river pressures there are significantly less than where they are where we're putting the tie-offs.
What about protecting the depot, the railroad depot? That's somewhere down the road, I think, in the flood mitigation project.
It was in conversation, but there is nothing structurally that we had planned. Now, with this last FEMA bout, there is some mitigation work that I'm trying to get done. Where we lost at the depot was from underneath.
Okay.
When things were happening at the riverfront, we had two small gas pumps, and we were having to pump out of the basement, and so we had to refill the gas tanks every 30 or 45 minutes, and so that didn't happen.
So
we lost water from underneath.
And the depot's a problem because what I believe you've got, it's a dirt floor, isn't it, in the basement?
The basement is more of a crawl space. It's probably 4 or 5 foot deep, and it's dirt floor. And so the river pressures push, and we have seepage underneath.
Oh, okay. And you had some, I know you had some damage within the actual main hall, didn't you, in terms of the floor of the main hall?
We had some cleaning that had to take place, and there was some, everything had to be cleaned, and then there was something to protect from mold,
Where do we stand in this potential restaurant project in the depot?
Well,
is there any activity on that at all?
Well, it has been discussed at city council meetings. You know, at the senior center off of Jefferson have a high utility bill there. They have a lot of space there. I did bring it up to them, and then it was kind of thrown out in the public conversation. So I guess I'm free to talk about it. I asked them, you know, would you be willing, or is the north end of the depot somewhere where you would look at going? And there's still some improvements that would need to be made before they could move in. But they were open to the conversation.
You're talking about the senior center downtown.
Correct.
Moving to the depot area. Okay.
Yep, and then having access to the great room to do, you know, the larger group activities that they do have.
And also having ample parking.
Correct.
Which I know is another issue. We're going to take a break. We got Nick McGregor with us. We'll be back right after these.
News now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
And now a look at today's headlines in the KBUR newsroom. I'm Colin Letty. The unofficial results of the Burlington combined election are in. A total of 3,247 votes were cast in this election for the city council. And the two who will be taking the two open seats, according to the unofficial election results, are Robert Kreitzer with 1,289 votes and Bill Maupin with 1,225 votes. Third candidate, Christopher Repke, gained a total of 708 votes. There were a total of 25 write-in votes and 649 undervotes with 2 overvotes. In the Burlington School Board elections, taking the place of current board members Heather Brick and Marlies Roberts and incumbent Brian Ross will be Annika McVeigh, Nancy Holzen, and Joel Searin. Incumbent Deborah Hattenberg, who gained the most votes according to unofficial election results, will retain her seat on the board. A Mount Union man has been arrested following a shooting incident Tuesday at a motel in Mount Pleasant that left one person injured. The Hawkeye reports that 45-year-old David Scott has been charged with first-degree burglary and terrorism. At approximately 7:40 a.m., law enforcement officers responded to a call from the Heidelberg Motel at 2005 East Washington Street in Mount Pleasant, reporting a shooting at one of the rooms, according to a release from the Mount Pleasant Police Department. Police say a suspect vehicle was seen leaving the area and stopped at the Pilot Travel Center. Officers subsequently took Scott into custody. One victim was identified and taken to Henry County Health Center for treatment of minor injuries. The incident is still under investigation. Members and employees of the governing board for Iowa's public universities could soon be barred from gambling on the college teams they help oversee. A policy proposed by the Board of Regents would bar board members and staff from betting on games involving the Iowa Hawkeyes, the Iowa State Cyclones, and the University of Northern Iowa Panthers. The board will consider adopting the policy at its meeting next week in Cedar Falls. A summary says the goal is to, quote, remove any question of a potential conflict of interest now that sports wagering has been legalized in Iowa. The prohibition would apply to both in-state and out-of-state casinos and would also bar regents from providing any non-public information to others making bets. Fantasy sports contests would be excluded. And those were today's headlines in the KBUR newsroom. I'm Colin Letty.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. A top career diplomat's at the Capitol answering questions for the impeachment inquiry.
David Hale, who's being deposed by the Intelligence Committee right now, is the number three official at the State Department. It's a hugely influential role. He's got daily access to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and really direct firsthand knowledge of how the Trump administration has been managing policy towards Ukraine over the last 2 years.
Fox's Jillian Turner, the Democrat in the race in Kentucky, Andy Beshear, declares victory as governor-elect. The current governor, though, Republican Matt Bevin, has not conceded. President Trump campaigned for him, and White House counselor Kellyanne Conway tells Fox,
I think the president made this race competitive, as did the vice president, and the president got 62.5% of the vote in Kentucky 3 short years ago. He'll dominate the state again next year.
Democrats will control the legislature in Virginia, flipping the state Senate. America's listening to Fox News.
Weather now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
Sunny skies giving way to increasing clouds today and a high about 55 degrees, but colder air moving in by this afternoon as south winds 10 to 15 become north this afternoon. Tonight, cloudy, a 30% chance of rain, possibly mixed with snow, becoming partly cloudy overnight, low to 26, and blustery north winds. And for Thursday, we'll see sunny skies, a cold 34 degrees. Right now, we've got skies that continue to be, let's call it a mostly sunny 47.
There are many reasons to join the Y. Building endurance, losing weight, and strengthening your heart. When you join the Y, you are committing to more than simply becoming healthier. You're supporting the values and programs that strengthen your community. At the Y, children learn what they can achieve, families spend quality time together, and we build relationships that deepen our sense of belonging. Check out all we have to offer online at burlingtony.org. The Y is more than just a gym. It's where you belong.
I'm Stephanie Shelton, CNBC. Stocks opening lower. The Dow down 32, NASDAQ down 23, and the S&P 500 off 2. A big surprise in worker productivity for the last quarter. It fell by 0.3%. Expectations were for a 0.9% increase after gains earlier this year. The Wall Street Journal reporting that Xerox is debating a takeover bid for the much larger computer and printer maker HP. There were fewer new mortgages last week, although the 30-year fixed rate loan fell to just under 4%. Costco and Instacart are testing a free one-hour prescription delivery for orders over $35. The pilot is in California and Washington State only. And Uber, opening about 6% lower. This is the day insiders can legally sell their shares, but Uber is down about 36% from its first public trading price. Again, the Dow is down 28 at the open. I'm Stephanie Shelton, CNBC.
Hey, my friend's company spent 3 days cleaning up an email phishing attack that targeted several dozen employees.
Yeah, if just one malicious email slips through, an attack can spread quickly and do serious damage.
What if that happens to us?
Don't worry. We have Barracuda Forensics and Incident Response.
So we're good?
Yes. With fast automated response and remediation, all traces of the attack can be removed in less than 5 minutes.
Wow, that's a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda. Your journey secured.
Sarcoma. Odds are you've never heard that word before. For the 40 people diagnosed with sarcoma every day, it is a life-changing word. Because sarcoma is cancer. Through awareness, advocacy, and research, the Sarcoma Foundation of America is bringing hope to the families whose lives have been turned upside down by a cancer they had never heard of until diagnosis. Please join us in the fight to find the cure for sarcoma. For more information on the work of the Sarcoma Foundation of America, go to curesarcoma.org.
Everything you need to know and more on AM and FM. All your favorite programs and personalities with a cleaner, clearer signal.
and a larger nighttime coverage area. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
And welcome back on the talk show today. Nick McGregor is the assistant city manager and in charge of public works, and that covers a lot of area, a lot of ground. It's snow removal, it's road building, it's overseeing the facilities of the city. One of those facilities would happen to be Memorial Auditorium, Burlington. We're talking about some of the challenges of Memorial Auditorium. You said you've got some work that's still being done. What on the down in the banquet room area, is that right?
Floor down there. There's still some work that needs to be done. You know, recovering from the damages when the breach happened, all the flooding in there. You know, all the carpet and the drywall had to be pulled out and removed. So that still needs to be done. But we're making progress. It's just not the fastest.
Okay. Now there is a proposal, and it's to put a hotel between the port building and the auditorium, and also to have the developers of that hotel, in essence, run the auditorium. Is that right?
Yeah, that was the proposal that he had, was to kind of take, I don't want to say take over the auditorium, but to make an investment in the facility.
And do some remodeling.
Correct. And I don't know the magnitude of what the investment was in the facility, but just knowing the building and the types of things that he was talking, it has to be fairly significant.
And because of the nature of that building, potentially expensive, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, with the wall and the structure of the facility as it is, you know, what he was talking about is going to be pretty pricey, and you know, making sure the structure is short.
How thick are those walls?
The interior ones, I think, are up to 18 inches in places, and even some of the outside ones in certain places are almost 3 foot wide.
Was it built for, you know, to withstand a tornado or hurricane or I don't know. I'm not even sure. It was built in 1937, so it wouldn't have been built. There wasn't even nuclear weapons by that time.
I know. It's not going anywhere, that's for sure, from a structure standpoint.
And so anything you do to it is going to be a challenge. Is that a safe bet?
I would say so.
Okay. Anyway, but is there a timeline on when more of that information or that potential thing would be coming out?
When the developer came and made a kind of a presentation to the council, I know they signed a 6-month exclusive deal to take a look at what that development would take. And I think that's up in the end of December, so I would expect a presentation at that time to be made, kind of on where he's at with things. But I could see an update earlier than that, just to, not kind of as a last second. Here's my 6-month time period. You know, here I am. So Jim's maybe had a conversation. Okay. I was gone for a little while, so he maybe has spoken with the gentleman on what that plan is. But
again, this is nothing is set in stone. Nothing has been agreed. This is something that is a proposal that is going to have public hearings and would have the council would have to certainly basically have a period of time to, especially with a new council that you got coming in. You got two new members of the council coming in after the election last night. So this is one of those things that's going to be yet to come, or I guess to be announced, so to speak, right?
Yeah, it won't go quickly, I guess, underneath people's... There's going to be several meetings on what would happen should the council elect to move forward, because the city owns the land from a federal I can't even say what it is, but we would have to lease the land to the developer, and so that would require public hearings
and then acceptance and the votes of the council, and then a public hearing, and et cetera. So as you look at the plans, there's a lot of different plans potentially in this, and I believe part of it is it the Tiger Grant that's giving providing funding for some of the amenities that have been proposed down at the auditorium?
Some of it is Tiger, but some of it is also there was a grant that
Eric I know the name after. Of it too, and I can't think of it either.
There's too much stuff out there to know all the names. It was like 300 and some thousand. So
great places, great places.
That's what it is. I don't know exactly what specifically that funded versus what Tiger's funding, You know, I know that the conversation of like the splash pad and the amphitheater seating and things like that are part of the Great Places, but I also know that there's some funding available from Tiger to help fund some of that. I think the biggest thing on the riverfront is whether or not that hotel development is happening or not, to from a planning perspective.
Right.
Because, you know, we have to have our plans done into the DOT so that we can bid out by October 1. So, and this is from a federal guideline that we need to have the monies obligated. So the timetable was compressed because the Tiger Grant Agreement took so long to get accomplished.
All right. So there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things yet to be determined, is what you're telling me.
Correct.
All right. We're going to take another break. Nick McGregor is our guest. We're talking about the, things going on in the city, and particularly his expertise, public works, and we'll be back right after this.
It starts with the action on the court, moves to the crowd, and is described by the broadcasters and transmitted to you, the energy, passion, and excitement on the Hawkeye Sports Network.
Iowa opens the season hosting Southern Illinois, Edwardsville, Friday night at 7. Brought to you by K-Spine Community Credit Union, the Boogaloo and Fun City at Pizzazz, Barn Grover Glass, and by Courtesy Door on News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
Looking for new furniture from top brands? Check out the Furniture Store in Burlington. They carry popular brands such as Ashley, Best, Flex Steel, Sunny Designs, and many more. Not only do they have some of the best prices in town, their dependable moving team will get your new furniture to your house very promptly. Free delivery with qualified purchases. For your next piece of furniture, check out the Furniture Store, located on the corner of Harrison and Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at thefurniturestoreburlington.com.
Is a large portion of your company's budget going to printing, copying, faxing, scanning? Hi, this is Mary Beth from J&S Electronics. We can help you develop, plan, service, and support your company's print strategy. Our team will identify areas of opportunity within your document output infrastructure that could save you on average up to 30%. Get your document output costs under control with J&S Electronic Business Systems. For service you can rely on, call or visit our website at jselectronics.com, a family business since 1963.
Super Clean Car Wash looks really nice and all, but I don't have all day to get my car washed.
Oh, it's very fast.
How fast?
We can wash your car clean, super clean, in about 3.5 minutes.
Oh, wow. That is fast. I have 3.5 minutes.
And with the $25 monthly Fast Pass, you can wash your car every day. Dirt, bugs, salt, grime, gone.
And the vacuums are always free to use with every wash?
That's right. Clean your car inside and out.
The absolute cleanest your car will ever be. Not just clean, super clean, on Agency next to Ashley Furniture.
Nick McGregor, who is on the talk show today, City Manager Day today, and again, Nick, the Assistant City Manager for Public Works, and he's also the voice of the City Manager's office when Jim Furno is not in or not available, and when Jim's not around, are you the acting city manager, or are you the
I just function as the assistant city manager.
Okay. All right. But
I don't make too many big decisions when he's out.
Okay. No major changes without consulting. Is that what I'm hearing? Okay. But again, we were talking about all of the things that are under your, under your kind of umbrella of responsibility. We talked about the depot. We talked about the Memorial Auditorium. Port building, is there any plans on doing any remodeling or anything like that?
With the Tiger Grant, and there was some, when they did the riverfront plans, there was the thought to do some shower houses, I think, on the eastern side, kind of redo that breezeway area. You know, kind of make it more accessible, especially if, you know, should the docks go in that have been discussed, to, you know, kind of have more of a boater-friendly atmosphere.
Shower houses? And mm-hmm. You mean as in, if you're on the river and you need to take a shower, or is that what is that?
The kind of people that are, you know, up and down the river.
Okay.
And because, you know, with the big dock structure,
okay, got it.
You know,
okay.
Kind of a longer-term stay and, you know, have an access to that type of
stuff. Okay. Yeah, I understand. That way they can be docked or but have some facilities to go and get off and do some things off their boats as opposed to whatever.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. We talked about the flood mitigation project. The inevitable Cascade Bridge. You didn't think I was ever going to mention it, did you?
I thought I was going to get through.
Anyway, Cascade Bridge. Is there a fundraising group that is actually trying, the Friends of Cascade? Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. But in terms of the engineering and all of the other studies, haven't all the engineering studies all been done recently on that bridge?
There have been engineering studies done on what a new bridge would cost and kind of the different variations. There was also a study done on what rehab versus replacement costs would be. You know, what's kind of the benefit, or, you know, where's the breakdown of that at? Currently, the city has hired Impact 7G. The biggest thing that lies in front of us, if the city is going to replace that bridge with a new one, it does lie on SHPO's historic registered places. And so
delisting it from the
It's a part of that replacement.
Oh, is that what
but
it is?
So okay. what we've hired Impact 7G is to kind of do a citizen engagement aspect and kind of go through what are the options that we can do with this structure. And so I note that they were at, I think, the Greater Burlington Partnerships Leadership Summit. I know that I'm in Kiwanis. They're at Kiwanis here on the 14th. I know that they've met and kind of discussed kind of with some public. There'll probably be some more public involvement that'll be advertised for that. So the city's working on kind of that conversation of where are we at from a SHPO standpoint, and what do we have to, if so chosen, to get that removed from the historic registered places.
Okay, so delisting is what is the actual way, the format. And I think, there's a price tag on that. Do you know what the price tag?
The contract with Impact 7G?
Yeah.
It was $47,000 and change.
Okay. Now the bridge itself, we talked about engineering studies. The deficiencies within the possibility that we're talking about that with city council members and also with Jim Furneaux, that there are areas that are weak enough that if 9 or 10 people were to all be on that one place,
span 3 has a 4-ton weight limit, and that was done in 2008. So that's when that load testing was done. No load testing has been done since then.
Okay.
Only from the sheer point, you already know that you have a limit in 08. There's no need to test it again on that load testing because you already have something that, you know, should trip somebody's trigger as far as a load testing. I can't imagine it's regressed that much in that duration. However, it certainly hasn't gone up.
Oh, well, I can't imagine it going up.
And so, you know, I know in the 2012 time frame they did a study on what the rehab costs were going to be, and I think it was in the $9 million bracket for rehab, you know, due to inflation. I'm sure it's in that ballpark or higher. And then, you know, for instance, we just did Mount Pleasant Street Bridge, and that was in the $5 million bracket with engineering. And so that one is a little bit more difficult to do at Cascade to replace something, but the span length and width is relatively the same.
Okay.
So in theory, you could do something around the $5 to $6 million from a replacement standpoint. The Mount Pleasant one's pretty blah as far as architectural features. But, so you may have to do something if you were to talk about that. But you're talking about a fairly significant gap in a replacement bridge versus rehab.
Rehabbing that bridge would be a very costly
correct.
Business. Is that right?
I've heard numbers thrown around, people talking about it on what you could actually rehab it for. The biggest issue is there's lead paint on that bridge.
Yeah.
It was built in 1896, and it lived throughout the duration of when lead paint was a thing.
It was built for the...
And that is not a simple lead paint abatement.
It was built as the access point to Crapo Park, and back in the... In fact, that's when Crapo Park opened up with that bridge. That was what got people to go to Crapo Park. And there was a Coliseum with 10,000 people that they had all sorts of things that they had. Also, they had a... They had a uh, They had a giant sled that would be, or I guess what sort of a, was a, like a water trolley. You'd actually get in, and it would be like a, you'd simply get in there, and it would whoosh you right all the way down, right into the river. It'd be, I don't know if it was, I think it had wheels on it, so that would take your boat. You'd have your boat, put it down there, and it just slide you right into the river. Does that
just whoosh you right in there?
Yeah.
I'm using your word.
very, very popular attraction back in that day.
I suppose it probably was.
But anyway, obviously a bridge like that, steel, lead paint, all of that stuff, all of that deteriorates over the period of time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. It is Nick McGregor joining us. Again, the snow removal budget. Are we doing well on the snow removal budget?
No, we just started this fiscal year's budget, so yes.
Okay.
But I did want to add something. We did change up. Normally, we had put a flyer in the Hawkeye,
right,
twice a year. We actually switched that up this year to make sure that people had more coverage. We're doing a mailer to the 11,000 some addresses. So you will see the same guide that we had in a condensed version, but wanted to make sure that there was more coverage as an understanding of what we do and, who to call.
Can I see this?
Yep. This is last year's.
Oh, this is last year's. Okay. It has Q&A on a thing. How do I get snow removal information after hours? Well, tune to your radio station. what's the order for snow removal on city streets? Bridges, overpasses, streets designated as snow routes, secondary routes, and then the remaining residential streets, and those I think we already talked about, those are based on trash route. Is that right?
Correct.
But, the other thing is getting curb to curb. There's no proposal, or there was a proposal, I think, brought up, and I don't know, regarding the downtown clearing. Downtown parking.
It really didn't go anywhere because there was a discussion of odd, even type parking, north south bound streets versus east west bound streets. I think last year exposed as far as the amount of volume of snow that we got, kind of what happens in the wintertime when you try and remove snow. There's kind of that no man's land where the property owners push the snow from the sidewalk, ends up near the curb line. We push the snow. The biggest thing is it's going to take a little time to do snow removal and try and get things back open. And so I think patience is the biggest thing. And I know that downtown is affected more so than a residential home.
Okay.
But it is on emergency, so they'll see people there quicker than what residentials will. But it's also difficult to remove the snow where people are currently parked as well.
Well, I would think that's got to be the biggest problem, especially when they're parked diagonally. Yeah. But I guess we have that issue right here. Driving in, we drive in and we park in front of the building or we park across the street, but we're parking diagonally as well. And there isn't much you can do about that, is there? I mean, it's other than be lucky enough and have the snowfall and have it all be done by timing is everything, isn't it? So, all right. Nick, what else is on the agenda? I guess what's the next big project for you? What is the biggest thing? What is the biggest thing you're working on right now? Is there such a thing?
Well, FEMA is consuming quite a bit of my time trying to make sure that we get all of the red tape covered, and then also there's some mitigation funds that will be available to do some things like pumping in the depot.
This is dealing sure. depot and auditorium and that sort of thing?
Correct.
Is that right? Okay. And was there any damage to the Port of Burlington building?
Yes, there was.
Okay.
Yep.
So you're also dealing with that as well? Okay.
Correct. Yep.
All right. But public buildings that are affected by flooding would be also through FEMA. I don't know. Downtown businesses that were affected or flooded, had basements flooded and that sort of
there,
thing.
There was some options to go after some funding, but I don't know. Gina would probably be the better person. Gina
okay.
Harg would probably
all
be
right.
the better person to ask. I think they were kind of coordinating through her to see if there's any available funds.
All right. Well, Nick McGregor, thank you so much for joining us today and telling us all about snow and bridges and roads and floods and HESCOs and all of the other things that you get to work with day in and day out. Thanks
well,
again.
Well, hopefully this scares away the snow and the flooding for the next six months or so, right?
All right. We'll do the best we can, okay? Thanks, Nick.
Yep.